Well, you all braved the snow this morning. I was expecting to see like three or four brave souls. You guys are hardy here in Indiana. So my name is Will Estrada. I'm one of the attorneys at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We are in Northern Virginia. We were founded in 1983, so this is our 35th year of operation. Back when we were founded, homeschooling was illegal in most of the 50 states. Today it's legal in all 50 states. We work very closely with fantastic organizations like the Indiana Association of Home Educators. We've got Dwayne here, who's been just a great representative, one of their board members. And I would just urge you, consider contributing, donating to IAHE. They are the boots on the ground here to continue to fight to defend homeschool freedom in Indianapolis, in the counties, and we work very closely with state organizations like IAHE and others all across the country. All of your donations are tax deductible, and it helps support the vital work that they're doing. But going back to the weather, so in Washington, D.C., I'm from New England, actually, so I'm used to driving in snow. When a single snowflake hits, everyone's like, it's the end of the world! And they start driving really crazy, and they start crashing their cars, and it's pretty insane. So a two-hour commute down to D.C. can sometimes take 4 or 5 hours, or you never get there at all. So you guys are great here. Well, I've been at Homeschool Legal Defense now for 14 years. I'm a homeschool graduate myself. I'm the oldest of 8 kids. My parents are still homeschooling my last sibling, who's 16 years old right now. And then 12 years ago, I was tapped to be HSLDA's Director of Federal Relations. So I'm your voice on Capitol Hill, and I always walk into these offices and I say, I've got two messages for you. Leave homeschoolers alone. Don't have any federal regulations or laws concerning homeschooling. That's a state, local matter. Homeschooling is a fundamental, God-given right enshrined in our Constitution, even though not in the black and white. But remember, the purpose of our Constitution is to only limit the role of the federal government, not to give us rights. Our founders believed that rights came from God and that government was simply there to protect our rights. So leave us alone at the federal level. And then second of all, treat homeschool graduates fairly. So we've gone and amended federal law to make sure that homeschoolers can enlist in the military, receive federal student aid when they go to colleges, that sort of thing, just that your homeschool diploma is treated as a diploma like any other school as well. I love what I do. I love being your voice in Washington, D.C. to defend homeschool freedom. And we could not do what we do if it weren't for our 85,000 member families. So if you're not a member of HSLDA, we'd love to have you join. And without the vital work that organizations like Indiana Association of Home Educators are doing here on the ground. So I am going to give you a fun, entertaining talk about how to lobby. And when you're done, you're going to be better lobbyists than me. You'll know all the ins and outs. You'll be able to go make a difference either in D.C., in the district offices in Indianapolis and scattered around in Indiana, your home state, wherever you are. You can take this to the state level, you know, again, lobbying, advocating for homeschool freedom or whatever issue you're passionate about, whether it's Second Amendment or free speech or low taxes or roads. You can take these skills and bring them for your issue that you're passionate about. So I love going and just telling people, you can make a difference. Remember what our Constitution says. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we are the government of our country. And when you are just engaged and ready to do it, you can make a big difference with your elected officials. I want to start off, though. How many of you saw that video a while back, Schoolhouse Rock, I'm just a bill? All right, I see a few hands. That's a great video. I'm not going to show it. I would encourage you to go to YouTube and watch it because I'm a boomer in a millennial body. And I love the old classic movies. My wife is a huge fan of the classic movies, the old 1930s movies. And so one of my favorite movies is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Anyone ever seen Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? 1939, Jimmy Stewart, phenomenal guy. He was actually a bomber pilot in the 8th Air Force in World War II. Back then, the average life expectancy was 3 months for the pilots, the bomber pilots who were flying the B-17s, B-24s over Nazi Germany. And he came back with very bad PTSD. And it was actually some of the other actors who said, because he wanted to leave Hollywood. He was a drunk, after that. And they encouraged him. They said, you know, go back, keep doing what you're doing, give people a reason to have joy. And I believe he came to Christ as well when you read some of his testimonies and stories about him. But I love Jimmy Stewart. He's here with Gene Arthur in this movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to see it. Here's a short 3-minute clip of how his assistant, back in the 1930s when they made this movie, a senator had only one staffer. Today, you walk into a Senate office, they can have 50 staff members. I mean, D.C., you know, drain the swamp, all that sort of stuff. D.C. is just growing and growing and growing. It's nice to get out of the Beltway and come and meet real people and who are not living in that bubble that is Washington, D.C., or as some people call it, the swamp. But here is how, as Gene Arthur, his assistant, describes how a bill becomes law, or doesn't, it's actually very similar to the process today that we have, you know, almost 80 years later. So let's let a clip from 1939 show us, again, how a bill becomes law. If the volume works. Seth, help me. You're my only hope. Where's our volume here? Is Seth here? Oh, that's bad if he's not here. Oh, I'm muted. That's why. No wonder. Operator error. Let's try again. Oh, well, if someone sees Seth, grab him, and we'll watch this video in a short moment. Dwayne, help me. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope. Okay. Well, while we're doing that, we'll jump back to our PowerPoint, and then we'll just jump back to our video when we can. So I'm HSLDA's Director of Federal Relations. Why should you be interested in advocacy or lobbying? Again, we the people, we're the government. If we don't speak out, particularly on important issues like homeschool freedom, parental rights, the unborn, things of that nature, who will? It's especially important to get out and advocate to your elected officials when you represent a political minority. And homeschoolers are a minority. We always have been. We probably always will be. You know, it's easy to put your kids into public school. If you're wealthy, private school is easier if you're able to get a scholarship. Homeschooling is tough. I mean, can we all say that? And I have a great respect for the homeschool moms who are here. Dads, make sure you support your wives as they're homeschooling. Be involved in the education as well. It's very, very important. But when we represent a political minority, it's even more important that we're out there advocating for our issue. It's not so much as it was maybe 20 years ago, but still there are many elected officials or their staff who don't really know homeschoolers. It's much better than it was a decade ago. Most of them will say, oh yeah, I knew a couple homeschoolers, but we still need to make sure that when they're thinking, particularly people who may be less inclined to support homeschool freedom, like from the Democrat Party, that's generally where it is. Again, don't want to be partisan, but that's just the fact on the ground. We need to make sure that when they think of homeschoolers, they think of our kids, they think of us. They're like, oh, I know the Smith family, or I know the Jones family, and they're great people, and that's the image they have in their head, not some sort of media-driven, you know, kids who never get out, never get socialized sort of thing. We want that to be their image of engaged, happy, smart, well-adjusted people who are homeschooled, who are come to their mind when they're voting on an issue that's of interest to us. It's a great example for your children, and it's actually fun to go and meet your elected officials or their staff. All right, the great Seth is here. Seth, you're the man. Can you help me here?
Yes, sir, we're going right ahead with it.
We're going right ahead with what?
The bill, my bill for our national boys' camp. Where's my briefcase? Oh,
just a moment. Do I understand that you're going to present a bill?
Yes, Senator Payne and I decided it was the only way we could...
Senator Payne decided this with you?
Yes, it was his idea. Of course, I should have been the one to think of it.
My dear Senator, have you the faintest idea of what it takes to get a bill passed?
No, you're going to help me.
If I were triplets, I'd...
Well, now, Ms. Saunders, Senator Payne said that you're going to help me. Now, what do we have to have? What books do we have to have?
And when Senator, you,
how do we write
do you
the
mind
bill?
If I give you a rough idea of what you're up against?
No, go ahead.
Well, our senator has a bill in mind, like you, a camp, right?
Right.
Fine. Now, what does he do? He has to sit down first and write it up. The why, when, where, how, and everything else. Now, that takes time.
Well, but this one is so simple.
Oh, I see. This one's simple.
Yeah, and with your help, why...
Oh, I'm helping, yeah. Simple, and I'm helping, so we knock it off in record-breaking time of, let's say, 3-4 days.
Oh, a day.
A day?
Yes, just tonight.
Tonight. I don't want to seem to be complaining, Senator, but in all civilized countries, there's an institution called dinner.
Oh, sort of hungry myself. Well, couldn't we sort of have some stuff brought in on trays, you know, like big executives?
No. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. Well, dinner comes in on trays. We're big executives. We're light into this.
And we finish the bill before morning.
Yeah. It's dawn. Your bill is ready. You take it over there and introduce it.
How?
You get to your feet in the Senate, take a long breath, and start spouting. But not too loud, because a couple of the senators might want to sleep. Then a curly-headed page boy takes it up to the desk where a long-faced clerk reads it, refers it to the right committee.
Committee, huh?
Committee.
Why?
Look, committees, small groups of senators have to sift a bill down, look into it, study it, and report to the whole Senate. You can't take a bill nobody ever heard about and discuss it among 96 men. Where would you get?
Yeah, I see that.
Good. Now, where are we?
Some committee's got it.
Yeah. Now, days are going by, Senator. Days, weeks. Finally, they think it's quite a bill. It goes over to the House of Representatives for debate and a vote. But it has to wait its turn on the calendar.
Calendar, huh?
Yeah. That's the order of business. Your bill has to stand way back there in line unless the steering committee thinks it's important.
What's that?
What?
The steering committee.
Do you really think we're getting anywhere?
Oh, yes, Miss Saunders. Now, tell me, what's the steering committee?
Committee of the majority party leaders. They decide when a bill is important enough to be moved up toward the head of the list.
Well, this is.
Pardon me, this is. Where are we now?
We're over in the House.
Oh, yeah, House. More amendments, more changes, and the bill goes back to the Senate. The Senate doesn't like what the House did to the bill, they make more changes. The House doesn't like those changes, stymie.
So?
So they appoint men from each House to go into a huddle called a conference, and they battle it out. Finally, if your bill is still alive after all this vivisection, it comes to a vote. Yes, sir. The big day finally arrives, and Congress adjourns. Catching on, Senator?
Uh-huh. Shall we start on it right away or order dinner first?
Pardon me?
I said, shall we get started on it right now or...
Oh, sure, yeah. Why not? Do you mind if I take the time to go and get a pencil?
Oh, no, go right ahead, Miss Saunders.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, go right ahead. And lots of paper, too.
Great movie. I love that movie. So Senator Jefferson Smith is making his boys camp bill and goes back and forth. And it's very similar to what happens today. Now, there's a lot of what's called unanimous consent, which is why they never actually read bills. Imagine if there had to be a clerk who would read the bill, that 2,000-page omnibus that just passed. It might actually save things, and people will be like, why are we putting this into a bill? But they're just like, I ask unanimous consent, we don't read the bill, and they're like, unanimous consent is approved, and they just move on. But that process is very similar to what happens. Conference committee changes, going back to the House and Senate, or some states have an assembly and a Senate, and then back and forth, and then, of course, if it passes, goes to the governor or the president for the signature, and then becomes law. Then there's a whole nother process. There are regulations to interpret it, particularly more at the federal level than at the state level. State bills have less regulations that go along with them. And that's even a process that you have to watch as well. And then the regulations are put out for notice of proposed rulemaking at the federal level. People can weigh in. And then finally, you have your law and then the regulations to interpret the law. It always reminds me of what Mark Twain said when he said, "Lovers of the law and lovers of sausage should watch neither being made." And it's definitely still the truth when you see that. One other thing I wonder if you caught in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington when she said 96 senators. This is before Alaska was a state and before Hawaii was a state in 1939. So a little anachronism there. All right, but back to why should you be interested in lobbying and advocacy? Some of the reasons to encourage you. So some of the common questions I get, and again, I'm probably preaching to the choir here. Homeschoolers are one of the most civically engaged group of people in the nation. This is a little bit of an old study. It's at our booth down in the conference hall, but it's called Homeschooling Grows Up. It was done in 2003, about 5,000 homeschool graduates, and it found that homeschoolers are far more likely to vote, to be engaged in the community, to be engaged in the civic process, to actually go on to higher education than their peers in public and private school. This is one of the studies we use when we go and lobby. Here's another one from 2009. It was 12,000 homeschool students looking at their academic progress. There's some fascinating points in there. How do homeschoolers do based on demographics, education level of their parents, the amount of income their families have? There's really no statistical difference. It's a great study. We have a new study that's coming out. It's just been finished by our research. We'll be putting in a nice format like this very soon, and it looks at 38 different studies, every study that's ever been done since about the 1970s when homeschooling began to have a resurgence again, and it looks at where those studies find how homeschoolers do. And I'll give you the executive summary. every study shows that homeschoolers do better academically than their public and private school peers. So that's the little inside scoop there. That will be coming out. It'll be the first major study that we've put out since 2009. So these are very helpful resources. But again, I understand I'm probably preaching to the choir because many of you probably have already done some advocacy work or some lobbying. You've gone and talked to your elected officials. When I talk to members of the general public, many of them are like, I don't even know who my elected officials are. And I'm like, well, do you know who the president is? And they usually get that one right. Vice president, less likely, although you guys are from Indiana, so I think you would know that answer. Supreme Court justices, I can't name a single one. I mean, it's pretty sad, we the people of the United States, that we're so, as a general matter, so uneducated about our elected officials. But homeschoolers are a little bit different, so I always say that with a caveat that I like talking to homeschoolers because you guys already are doing this. How can I lobby if I don't live near Washington, D.C. or my state capital? How can I lobby if I don't know what to say? Will anyone listen to me? Will I embarrass myself or the people I'm representing? I don't have time to drive down and meet with my representatives or their staff. Or I want to lobby. What do I do now? And again, I want this to be very action-packed and very informative. So if any of you have any questions about what I'm saying or just a question that has popped to your mind, feel free to raise your hand. We'll address it now. I'll give a time for questions at the end as well, but I'd love to answer the questions right now. So here's an answer to the first question. What if I don't live near Washington, D.C. or my state capital? Make it a field trip or vacation. I talk to a lot of people who say, we want to come visit D.C. Contact our office. Our email is federalrelations@hslda.org. Of course, HSLDA's main number is 540-338-5600. We will give you the resources you need. We'll send this in the mail to you, or you could even meet up with our staff when you're in D.C. If you're wanting to lobby about the Parental Rights Amendment, which is one of our big priorities, to put an amendment guaranteeing the right of parents to direct the education, upbringing, and care of their children in the U.S. Constitution. We can give you that information as well. And then if you're coming to visit D.C., take a few minutes to go stop by your elected offices. They love to see constituents. You could even set up a meeting beforehand. You might see if the senator or congressman is in town, and they'll come and shake your hand, give you gallery passes to go watch the House and Senate in action. And that's a great way. Also, you can make it a field trip or vacation to your state capital. We're really close to the state capital, although I don't think they're in session right now. Are they in session? Yeah, I see people shaking their head. I don't think they're in session here in Indiana. Then see if your advocacy association, Indiana Association of Home Educators, has a capital day. Dwayne, do you guys have a capital day? Excellent. When is the date? Just passed it. Okay. So talk to Dwayne or the IAHE people if you are interested in coming next year. I would highly encourage you to do that. It's a lot of fun. People come up. I was once asked to go speak in Oregon at their state capital day. And they call it the apple pie day because they bake apple pies and bring it. So I'm checking in at the hotel in the capital in Portland. And the guy's like, what are you here for? I'm like, oh, I'm here for the apple pie day. He's like, whoa, what's that? I'm like, oh, you know, we meet with elected officials. He's like, you throw apple pies at them? I'm like, no. And he's like, oh, too bad. That would have been so much more interesting. So that always cracked me up. So join in with the Indiana Association of Home Educators, their capital day. There's safety in numbers. When homeschoolers come in large numbers, whether it's 200, 500, 1,000, if you can get that many, it really makes an impact and shows the dedication of your movement and our community. Go to a local office. Most of us don't have the time to get down to D.C., but every U.S. congressman, every U.S. congresswoman, every U.S. senator has district offices in the states. Most are in the Capitol, but there are also district offices near where you live. You can go to our webpage. It's called hslda.org/legislation. It's a really handy action page. We have pre-written emails that you can send to your elected officials on issues that we're tracking, and you also can find who your legislator is. You put in your address, you put in your zip code, and it actually saves it for you. So the next time you come to hslda.org/legislation, everything is pre-filled. We spend a lot of money on this at HSLDA, but it's one of the priorities that we have. We just got a new program called Voter Voice. It's very, very, it's the top of the line out there because we want to make it easy for you as homeschoolers, the constituents, we the people, to make a difference with our elected officials. So use our thing. Actually, we just got it 2 or 3 months ago. It's already been shared online 80,000 times, which is one of the most amazing things, I think, because people are really enjoying this, really sharing it with their friends. Facebook has a new program, Find My Legislator. Of course, Facebook will take all of your data and will sell it, but, you know, Do we all really think that we were getting to share our photos for free? So you can get your information of who your elected official is, their district offices from Facebook. You can, of course, always call the Capitol switchboard, 202-224-3121. That phone number is speed dialed in my phone because I like calling my elected officials. I'm actually friends with most of them, not the Democrats. I need to be more bipartisan. I know them personally. I actually have some of their cell phone numbers. I'll text them and say, vote on this bill, and they usually do. But you can find their local office, and you could even schedule a meeting. So try and get to the local offices. Local offices are very important because very few people know about them. And when 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 people show up about an issue at a district office or start calling a district office, kind of the red warning signs go off at the district offices, and they start calling the people in D.C. and saying, there's some grassroots momentum about this issue. You need to make sure that you're doing what the people want. So call the district offices. It's one of those best-kept secrets. All the organizations put out the Capitol switchboard number, and you get the jaded people like Jean Arthur in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington who are like, yep, thank you, whatever you want, because they handle hundreds of these calls. They're very jaded. They're good people, but they're jaded. And when you're contacting a district office, they know that you are the hardcore activists and that this is something very, very important. Of course, it's an election year coming up, so elected officials are even more receptive to what people are thinking about an issue. So start building relationships with your district staffers in your local district office. How can I lobby if I don't know what to say? All of us have something to say. Am I right? We all have something burning in our heart about some issue. We might be scared to say it. We might, you know, we'd be like, I'd rather die than get up and stand in front of an audience. But talking one-on-one with a staffer is something all of us can do. Bring your kids. Explain what you do. You could go and say, you could contact them and say, I'd like to have 10 minutes just to talk with you about homeschooling, introduce myself to you. Have your kids, you know, share what a school day looks like. Bring some of their photos or schoolwork with them. We all know this. Elected officials see people wearing the suit and tie all the time. They love meeting kids. They'll be like, can we take a picture? And if you're comfortable with that, you know, you might become Facebook famous and celebrity for one of your elected officials. And let them see normal people. And then lots of organizations do this. So you're not doing something that's weird, that's frowned on. Elected officials like to see people. One of the big things that it's very ineffective, but a lot of organizations have been doing it in D.C. is just being really rude. They go and they'll blockade. You've seen some of those YouTube videos probably. They'll go blockade House and Senate offices. They'll march around. It always reminds me of when the Israelites marched around the city of Jericho. They'll march around Capitol Hill chanting things. They get arrested all the time. In fact, the Capitol Police have it down to a science. They bring their big bus up. They arrest everyone. The people just go limp. They're not violent, thankfully. But the cops have to drag them out and lift them up. And they book them right there outside of the Capitol building. So they have the little picture. They take the photo. And then they say, all right, here's your summons. You know, if you don't show up on this date for your court date, you'll get a $250 fine or something like that. And most of the people don't ever get charged with anything. But they don't even bring them downtown to the prison anymore. They just take their booking photo right outside of the Capitol and then give them their ticket right there. But it's so ineffective. Lots of the gun control groups have been doing this. Lots of the immigration activists have been doing it. So when nice people come, even if maybe you live in a district of someone who's generally hostile to your issues, you're going to set yourself apart from where a lot of people are going with their YouTube, what I call YouTube activism, just doing and saying crazy things so they'll get a couple retweets. But it's really turning a lot of people on Capitol Hill and in the district offices off. So come on in. Be friendly, even if they're with someone, even if you're in an office that might be hostile to what you stand for, because it's starting to build that relationship. And again, lots of groups do this. Will anyone listen to me? They better. You're the voter. Everyone else is talking. Why shouldn't you? And they actually do listen. When you visit a district office, when you visit a DC office, you interrupt their schedule. And so they're forced to listen to you. And I always remind people, when you're thinking of lobbying or advocacy or activism, think of the most effective thing that you can do is what takes the most time. A visit in person to a district office or Washington, D.C. is the most effective advocacy tool you can ever use for homeschooling, for any issue that you might be passionate about. The second most is a phone call, whether to DC or especially to a district office. And think of it, they can't just delete a phone call. They have to pick it up. If enough voice messages are coming, somebody has to check them. Keep calling if you're getting the voicemail. Trying around. Sometimes the Capitol Hill offices will shut down their voicemails and you can't actually talk to a live person. So that's where finding the district office is so effective, because you can bypass that. Hello, you've reached, you know, Senator Todd Young or Senator Joe Donnelly. I'm sorry no one's around, but please leave a message and we'll get back to you. And they never get back to you usually. And you're wondering, did someone actually listen to my message? That's where the district offices are so, well, knocking everything over here. That's where the district offices are so effective, because you can bypass those standard voice messages that they leave sometimes. And then sometimes organizations will do big phone days and shut down Capitol Hill, and you might get a busy signal. I remember that happened when the tax bill came through in 2012 when the UN Disabilities Treaty was up. There was a busy signal. Some of the immigration votes, there's so many phone calls coming in, Capitol Hill gets shut down. You can bypass it all at the district offices. So phone calls are the second most effective, because somebody has to pick it up. Third would be a handwritten letter or a letter that you print out, because those are so rare anymore. People just send emails. I mean, think of it. When you get a note, either handwritten or typed out and signed, that's kind of rare nowadays. And so when you do that to your elected official, I generally consider it to be the third most effective way. Emails are effective, so that's number four. And then down at the end, we all get those petitions. Sign the petition to tell Congress to do this. They're basically useless. Petitions, and some people, if there are any advocacy people here, they're going to hate me for saying this, petitions don't move the ball in D.C. Petitions are so outside organizations, and some of them are good organizations, can get email addresses that they can use to build their network of people. We try not to use petitions at Homeschool Legal Defense, because I really dislike petitions. And there's good organizations that do them, Family Research Council, National Rifle Association. A lot of organizations do petitions. They primarily benefit the organization. They don't really move the needle with advocacy in D.C. because they're so easy to ignore. Another thing that a lot of people do today that's very easy to ignore are tweeting at elected officials, Facebook messages to elected officials, because those have basically been swarmed by out-of-state activists, and so they just disregard them when they come in. So again, just think of it. The easier for me to do is probably the less effective in advocating for my position with my elected official. You can send your bathrobe and morning coffee tweeting at your elected officials. That's how easy it is. Makes very little impact. Going, putting a suit on, getting nice clothes, driving down to the local district office, that takes work, but that's what really moves the ball. So hope I didn't offend anyone for saying that, but that's the truth. What if I embarrass myself? Did I spell embarrass wrong? That's embarrassing. Myself and homeschoolers, it's unlikely. Don't let great be the enemy of good. I'm not like Will Estrada and can talk really fast in that New England way and know a lot of issues, and so I can't go and advocate. You're better than I am, because you're a real person who votes or doesn't vote for them, who talks to your friends. You are more effective than I am, because you're the real person out there. You're doing it because you're passionate about something. And if you're really concerned that you're like Moses. Remember when Moses was going through his excuses to God? I can't talk. And God said, all right, bring a friend. Bring Aaron with you, and he can talk, and I'll give him and you the words to say. So bring a friend. Make it a fun event. You can bring your kids with you. Bring a couple friends. Caravan on down. Make them pay for the gas, that sort of thing. And then you can go and really see. I'm addressing all of your concerns, because I really want all of you to go and start advocating. And I know many of you, probably every one of you, has on occasion. But we need to be more engaged. I believe we live in the greatest country in the world and in history. And it's very sad that and it's natural that life gets in the way and we can't be involved with our elected officials. We really do need to, I think, be good stewards of this freedom that we have in America, not take it for granted, and be as involved as we can. But make it a family event. Bring your friends as well. I don't have time to drive down and meet with my representatives. If you really can't, phone calls, write emails or letters, anything to make some noise. I do understand, we live in a busy time and age where we're educating our children, we're working, we're just very busy. But again, as much as you can, try and be involved and build those relationships. All right, I'm ready to begin working the Hill or district office. I'm ready to go and start visiting. What are some things I need to do? before you leave, dress nicely. Again, you know, we live in this day and age of where people are just living for those YouTube moments, and they're wearing, you know, their ripped jeans and going and meeting with their elected officials, and they don't care because they just want to say stuff that's going to be a YouTube sensation. Be different. You know, as Christians, we should be wanting to make a good impression when we're meeting with our elected officials. And those first, it's the same thing of when you're going, you know, for a job interview or anything of that nature. First impressions do make a lasting impression. And so dress professionally. You don't have to wear a suit and tie, but dress professionally because it's a way of showing respect for your elected officials and their staff. Give yourself time to get down there. Being late is natural. I think I said in my talk yesterday there were 8 of us kids, mom and dad, and we were called ourselves the Estrada Late Birds because we were about an hour late to everything. And that happens, but try and be professional. Many times these elected officials and their staff are on a schedule, and they may not be able to meet with you if you're late, so try and get there early. It's part of, again, you know, respecting their time. Review and organize your lobbying materials. Have a little bit of a script. You don't need to game it out. It doesn't need to be like a football game where you're practicing for weeks before you go, but have a huddle before you while you're driving down or while you're walking over there and say, all right, Joey, you're going to introduce yourself. Mom and Dad are going to say hi and thank you. And then, Joey, you're going to say, you know, I want to talk about homeschooling. Here's what I do when I wake up in the morning, that sort of thing, especially if you're going as a group. If it's one-on-one, it's really easy. You're carrying it all. But have a strategy so you can get in. Again, you're only going to have about 10 or 15 minutes. That's what you're guaranteed. And if it's a really busy day, like on lobby day, where so many people are coming in, you might have less. But that's what you should assume, that you're going to have 10 or 15 minutes, then phone calls are going to interrupt, emails are going to interrupt, they're going to start checking their iPhone and their emails, there might be a committee hearing coming up. So you will know if it's a good meeting, if you're really resonating with them, if people are popping their heads in, they're saying, no, we want to keep talking. But go in guaranteed for 10 or 15 minutes, knowing that that's when you've got them, and anything else beyond that is a bonus point. So have it pre-planned out. Another thing is, if you're not familiar with where you're driving, have parking worked out. Lots of times you get there on time and then you can't find a place to park. Worst case scenario, drop everyone off and somebody goes down with the ship and just keeps circling to try and find a parking space. So at least the rest of you can get in there. Leave no man behind. On the Hill or district office, again, arrive on time. You always want to introduce yourself. If you have a business card, that's great. Even if it's a business card that's irrelevant to the issue you're advocating about, go ahead and give it to them so that they've got something right there. Keep it short and sweet. Attention spans, and sad with where we're going as a society, but attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. And, again, I wish it weren't the case, but that is so that's how things are happening. Drop off materials. Sometimes something will just come up and a staffer might be sick or not be there. Still have something that you can drop off. We have nice folders at Homeschool Legal Defense and parentalrights.org. If you're wanting to do visits, you can just contact us. We'll send those to you free of charge. They have a spot for a business card. They have little folders that you can put things in. Always be grateful. Gratefulness is important. I don't think you all need to know that. Your homeschoolers are very grateful people. That's really good. Be extra friendly and smile. One thing to know is a lot of staffers, less so at the district office, but more in the actual offices in the state capitol and in D.C., most staffers are fresh out of college. Again, that's not the rule, but very few, but just because of the salaries that they make, it's more likely than not you're going to get someone who's doesn't have kids yet, who doesn't have a lot of real-world experience. This may be their first or second job. And so you walking them through what it's like as a homeschooler or what the issue is or something like that might actually be very informative to them because they're still kind of haven't been through some of the life experience that you have, particularly when it comes to family issues, homeschooling, raising kids, issues of that nature. When you're done, and this is one of those bonus things. I don't even do this all the time, and I really should, but it's just so many things pop up. Send a thank you note, because that really shows, it's that reminder, it really shows that you put time and effort into it. If you really can't send a thank you note, send them an email on the drive home or when you get home, as soon as you can, just saying, really enjoyed our time, thank you so much, look forward to working with you to continue to ensure that homeschooling remains free in Indiana or in the United States or something of that nature. Stay in touch. It doesn't hurt to reach out to someone, you know, maybe a big vote came up, and say, hey, I just wanted to let you know I was really happy how your boss voted on this issue. I remember we met 3 months ago, and I'm just very grateful for you, that sort of thing. So stay in touch. It's all about the relationships, and it makes it easier the next time when you're wanting to set up a meeting because they remember you, you remember them. You don't have to go all over through the process again of calling up the office saying, who do we talk to about scheduling a meeting, that sort of thing. It's all about the relationships. And then I really believe that God has blessed homeschoolers. Homeschoolers win when we go out there, when we fight. The first time, well, going back in history, you know, 1983 was when Homeschool Legal Defense Association was founded. Indiana Association of Home Educators was founded in 1985, right? Or because this is your 33rd year, right?
No, 83.
80, oh, was 83? Okay, so... Okay, first convention was. Okay, so 83, wow, founded in the same time. You know, Family Research Council was founded in 1983, too. I was born in 1983, so a lot of good things happened in 1983. So, man, sorry, now you all know how old I am. And so homeschoolers did that lobbying, they fought for freedom, and the state legislatures began to flip. One of the first time that homeschooling went national to fight for freedom was in H.R. 6. I see some people nodding their heads. The Battle of H.R. 6 was the annual... what time is it? Before I wax eloquent. Okay, we've got some time, and then we're almost done. In 1965, the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 was the first time the federal government really began to get involved in education. This was LBJ, Lyndon B. Johnson, the Great Society, the federal government kind of encroaching into every area. And they said, this was before the U.S. Department of Education was actually created. That was 1979 under Carter. But they said, we need to start having a federal ESEA, Elementary and Secondary Education Act, law to help the states with public schools. It was 35 pages long. ESEA, Elementary and Secondary Education Act, is supposed to be reauthorized every 6 years. So it was reauthorized in 1971, 1978, 1984, and then it was delayed for a couple years, and then really, you know, I think when a bill isn't reauthorized, it should just die. That never happens at the federal level. They just keep funding it at the same level. So 1994 was, I believe, the fifth time that the Elementary and Secondary Education Act of 1965 came up for reauthorization. By this time, it had ballooned to 600 pages. Remember, it was only 35 pages in 1965. And this was, for those of you who remember history, this was February of 1994. Bill Clinton had been elected in 1992. The Democrats still had a very strong majority in the House and Senate. Of course, that would change in November of 94. But right now, they still controlled all the committees. And a liberal Democrat congressman from California named George Miller, who was on the Education Committee in the House, slipped in a provision saying every teacher needed to be certified in every subject area that and every grade level that they taught. So Dick Armey, a Republican congressman from Texas, in the committee said, well, let's just introduce a friendly amendment to say, let's just clarify that this is public school teachers. And that amendment was voted down on a party line basis. And with that legislative history, all of a sudden, we at HSLDA and state organizations and our friends on Capitol Hill realized this could be the end of homeschooling. Imagine if every homeschool, every private school parent had to be certified, or every private school teacher, so every homeschool parent, every private school teacher, needed to be certified in every grade level and every subject that they taught. And so we went to DEFCON 1. Now, for those of you who remember, email didn't exist back then. So the way to communicate was through fax trees. You're nodding your head. So you'd send out a fax. You'd have to call 10 people. They'd call 10 people. And the word got out. And within a couple days, and the bill was being fast-tracked as well. There was a blizzard that shut down the East Coast. Within a couple days, hundreds of thousands and then millions of homeschoolers, our friends, private schoolers, even public schoolers, because back then most of the small rural public schools couldn't even afford to have every single of their one of their teachers certified in every grade level and every subject that they taught, started calling down to Capitol Hill. I remember as a kid listening to this, my parents were calling, and the busy signal was going on. Again, this was before email, so the only way that members of Congress could talk to their staff was picking up the phone and calling, and they couldn't reach their staff. And Congress said, we're not going to do this George Miller amendment. It came up for a vote came up to strip it on the House floor. It's very rare when that happens. And only one member of Congress voted for it. George Miller was the only one who voted for his language. The language was stripped out of the bill on a vote of 419-1, and homeschooling was saved, and that provision was stripped out of the bill, requiring every teacher to be certified in every subject area. I still run into members of Congress who say, I remember what homeschoolers did in 1994. We will never mess with you again. It's incredible. I ran into Dick Armey a few years ago, and he interrupted everyone. He was like, everyone, I want you to hear what happened with the homeschoolers in 1994. He eventually ended up becoming, I think, majority whip for the Republican Party, so he became a very powerful member of Congress, and now he makes like millions of dollars as a lobbyist or something, all what these members of Congress do. But that's the first time homeschoolers... The strength of the homeschool movement was shown. They still remember it. Then in 2012, the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities came up again. Homeschoolers swung into action. Our friends at Heritage Foundation had said, there's no way we're going to be able to defeat this treaty. And by the grace of God, because of the vigilance of homeschool families, I was on Capitol Hill leading our fight to defeat that treaty. And staffers are telling me the phones are ringing off the hook. And staffers are saying, Will, the calls are coming in 100, 200-1 against this UN treaty. And enough of the senators flipped their votes that we were able to defeat that treaty as well. So what's happening now, we're not seeing stuff coming up at the federal level, but in the wake of the California Turpin case, the kids who were locked in the basement, many, many states have been introducing very restrictive bills to roll back homeschool freedom. Hawaii introduced a bill that would have required every homeschool parent to go down to the local police station, get fingerprinted, and have a background check run by the government in order to choose to exercise their fundamental right to direct the education and upbringing of their children. There's not a single Republican senator in the state of Hawaii. And that bill came up for a hearing in the Senate a couple weeks ago. 900 homeschoolers came. They filled up Capitol Hill. There were 5 overflow rooms. The entire committee room was filled up. Our attorney, Peter Kamakavivuole, he's actually a descendant of the last emperor of Hawaii as well. He came and he testified against the bill. At the end of the day, the sponsor of the bill said, I was going to call for a vote, but I've heard the voices of homeschoolers, a liberal Democrat, and she said, I'm withdrawing my bill. It's dead. I'm not going to try and bring it through again. That was a miracle. And it was because of homeschoolers coming out winsomely, but persuasively and passionately arguing against this bill. The same thing happened in Maryland just a week ago. Another bad bill was introduced. We do not have the votes to stop anything in Maryland. And within 2 days, this was a bill that would have again required social services to have unannounced visits into families who are homeschooling their children. The bill was introduced. So many phone calls and emails came in that the sponsor 2 days later just said, you know what, I'm voluntarily withdrawing the bill. We're not going to have a vote on it. I'm not going to bring it up again. I had no idea there would be such interest in this bill, and I think maybe I made a mistake sponsoring it. Liberal, you know, hardcore radical activist who, because by the grace of God and the diligence of homeschoolers, completely went the other way. There's really no earthly reason about it. And then the other state we're having a lot of battles right now is California. Bills have been introduced in Iowa, New Hampshire, Ohio, but we've got majorities, and I think those bills aren't going to go anywhere. But California, again, there's very little we can do politically, so a bill has been introduced to really roll back a lot of their homeschool freedoms. There was going to be mandatory home visits by government officials, but that part was taken out. So already we had a bit of a victory, but they're going to have to do testing and notice of intents and evaluations. So keep praying for us and the homeschoolers in California that that bill would be defeated. But it's incredible to see the passion and the success of homeschoolers. Do you know there's not been a single state that has rolled back homeschool freedom since the 1980s? It's because of a testament of what you all are doing, your passion, your interest in being involved. And that's why it's so important and so critical that we continue to fight for homeschool freedom, whether it's phone calls, whether it's letters, whether it's visits, whether it's going down to the Capitol on Lobby Day when IAHE has it next year. You can make a difference. Vote. Get your friends to vote. It can be depressing sometimes when you think, I'm calling my members of Congress. They're still voting for these omnibus bills and crazy stuff. But remember that we may not win all the time, but the most important things, like the homeschool issues, where we're able to have that freedom to direct the education and upbringing of our children, We've got a really good track record, by the grace of God. On the picture on the far left is our former president, my former boss, Mike Farris. He's briefing a lot of our local homeschool families. We train them how to lobby on Capitol Hill. They're kind of our fast action teams who come on in. And then here on the right-hand side, that's former Congressman Frank Wolf. He did a huge amount of work on international religious freedom. He actually leads the Wilberforce Initiative, which is doing a lot of work for protecting Christian refugees, as well as people who are persecuted because of their faith worldwide. And that's him when he was in Congress meeting with a local homeschool family as well. So I encourage you, get involved. I hope that this is helpful of kind of giving you some step-by-step processes of how to lobby. And then we'll see you on the Hill as you fight for freedom. Thank you for all that you're doing. God bless you. And again, contact us if you have any questions on how to be a good advocate for homeschooling. Oh, questions. Questions. I almost forgot. Anyone have any questions about what we talked about? Yes, in the green.
Is it as effective talking to the staffer versus the actual representative or senator?
Sometimes it's more effective talking with the staffer. It depends on the office. It depends on the staffer. But if you're talking to a senior staffer, like a chief of staff, sometimes that's actually more effective than talking with the actual member of Congress or the actual legislator. I always like talking to the legislator, but they are so busy, they're being pulled in every direction, that sometimes just a two-minute, hi, keep homeschooling, have a little soundbite ready, because you might just get that with the member of Congress or the elected official. You might pass them in the hallway. So just, my name is John, we live in your district, please always vote to protect homeschoolers. Something of that nature, ready. And then you have more detail to staffer. It depends. If you're pushed off on a low-level staffer, it's not going to be that effective. But it's, again, building that relationship. And many times the low-level staffers become the high-level staffers in a year or two. But don't be discouraged if you only get to talk to a staffer. Sometimes the staffers are actually more important to talk to. It's a good question. Yes, sir.
I'm a member of the National Association of Realtors.
Good. We do. Are you a member of Homeschool Legal Defense? Okay, so all members, if you give us your email address, you'll get those action alerts. Do you? IAHE sends out action alerts too, right? If you donate to IAHE, even a $5 donation or $20 donation, more is always better because they're doing great work, and give them your email address, they'll send action alerts too. If you're not ready to join HSLDA yet or give a donation, you can actually go down to our booth, HSLDA's booth, and I know you guys have that as well. We have a little drawing for a $25 credit card, or at the gift card. So at the very least, you can sign up for the emails, and we send action alerts. And if you think you're getting too many emails, just go through and click, I don't want to get your weekly updates, I don't want to get your how to homeschool, I just want to get action alerts. We have that option as well. And then if a bill is moving in Congress or a bill is moving in Indiana or there might be a daytime curfew in your county, we and IAHE will send action alerts so you are ready. And again, we've got that link to hslda.org/legislation. I think that was our fast link, where you can go find your elected officials. We have pre-written messages, so it's very, very effective. Yes, sign up. If you're not, not everyone can join HSLDA or donate to IAHE. I understand that. But definitely sign up for the emails, because you'll get that information. You'll at least know what's going on, just like National Association of Realtors, and you'll be able to know when a bill or a vote is coming up that could affect your freedom as well. So definitely sign up for the emails. Yes, ma'am. Yes, yes. How do people participate in the PAGE program? Now, this is for teenagers, right?
Teenagers.
Yeah. So, I can't underline that enough. That is such a good program for your teens. It might end up in being a job. I'm just going to pontificate for a second. The reason why the states generally have better budgets and, you know, better fiscal situations than D.C. is because they are required to do a budget. Most of the states have a balanced budget amendment. If I were king for a day, I would make it that in D.C., Congress couldn't pass any other bill until they got a budget through. And it had to be a balanced budget. You know, I'd be grateful. I would be nice to them. I'd say, you can balance in 30 years. You know, don't have to balance next year. So you don't have to cut everything and, you know, dock all the aircraft carriers. But I'd say you have to have a budget that balances within 30 years, or you can't pass any other laws. No gun control laws, no tax laws, nothing like that. You have to get the budget done, if I were king for a day. Never going to happen, but no one would ever want me as king because of that issue. But that would get, see, that's the problem we have in D.C. They don't have a balanced budget amendment. So unlike the states, they just do whatever they want to do, and it doesn't balance. Did you have your hand up? Yes.
I was wondering, is it like important to go back, and how many times do you do that without me?
Oh, that's a good question. So, first start with the meeting. So definitely first start, and then kind of get the sense. You might really have a rapport with a staffer or a member of Congress, and then sure, you know, shoot them an email and say, not like the next day, but, you know, next month, and say, hey, I'm going to be back in Indianapolis. Could I stop by and just say hi and give you some more information about homeschooling or a bill that might be coming up? Again, they're very busy. So a good way of looking at it, and a lot of politicos look at it, is there's a term like chits. And we all have political chits. And when we ask a member of Congress for something, or think of it as like little, bonus cards. When you ask a member of Congress for something, you're giving up one of your creds or one of your credits with them or one of your chits with them. And if you are asking often and often, you're giving up more of that. Political capital is another term. So spend your political capital wisely. You know, don't bug them about everything. There's lots of bills that come up, particularly in Washington, D.C. And sometimes I'll say, oh, I really want to call about this issue, but I know that another issue is, I'm an NRA life member, and so, you know, gun rights is a big important thing for me. Budget is important to me as well, but sometimes I'll be like, ugh, I'm not going to call about this budget bill because I'm really passionate about this gun control bill that's going to come up next week. I'm going to wait to call about that. Everyone's different. We all have different issues, but if you contact them every week about every other issue, you're going to spend a lot of your political capital, and you won't have as much for when things are really important. So again, gauge it out. If you have a very hostile member of Congress, don't contact them a lot. Unless it's something you're really passionate about, then it will be a better use of your political capital. If it's a friendly member and you have a good rapport, sure, let them know your opinions on bills. Just remember, you know, we all have a set amount of political capital. Those who actually, one way to get involved more is volunteer with an elected official who does what you want them to do. And then you'll have more political capital to spend and to really influence them. One other thing and a way to get to really know your elected officials is be involved in a political party, you know, a Republican party, a Democrat party in your county, and you'll get to know the elected officials and you'll get more political capital that you can spend on the issues. I was the chairman of our local Republican committee in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is a battleground county. I think we've kind of lost, actually. It's gone blue. But for a long time, you know, everyone would come through there. President Trump campaigned in Loudoun County. Our members of Congress campaigned, our gubernatorial candidates. And because I was the chairman, I had access and influence that is hard to get unless you're a millionaire and giving lots of money. So very few of us are millionaires. If you are, you've got it easy as far as having political capital. But there's other ways to get that political capital, volunteering, being involved in a party. And then the more you're involved, the more you can do. That's a very, very good question, though. Thank you for that. Final question. Yes, sir. We never marched we marched on the state houses, but we've never marched in D.C.
All the times that we've gathered and made our presence known, how many cars were returned and how many buildings were burned?
Zero cars were burned, you know, and I always remember what happened in Wisconsin when the teachers' unions came in and they were screaming and yelling and assaulting elected officials, and they lost. Winsomeness wins, and sometimes we see what the other side is doing, sometimes we're like, should we be doing that? They seem really passionate. And I think it's hurting their cause. I've heard that the DACA people, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, they are really, you know, when you look at it politically, they should win every issue. They're very, you know, very emotional heartstrings, but they burned their political capital. And even with Democrat offices, I mean, they were just take no prisoners, refusing to make any concessions, and then acting very rudely to elected officials, you know, chanting, blocking roads. And that sort of stuff, even with their friends, really can turn people off. So don't burn cars, don't beat up elected officials, and again, you know, we're Christians, and we're passionate about this issue. There are going to be disagreements with our elected officials. Don't do what a guy just did in Virginia with Scott Taylor. He's the former Navy SEAL who's a member of Congress. He got upset over, I think it was a water bill or something, and he was like, I'm going to go and get my gun and shoot all of you. I mean, he's arrested now. So be winsome, act in that Christian manner, because ultimately you can attract more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. So, good question. Thank you very much for coming on out. I'll be at the HSLDA booth if you have any other questions.